Hello and welcome to the third episode of One Footer in the Grave, the podcast for people who are bored and have no life. But it's vaguely possible that my wonderful co-hosts Andy Clark, John Hicks and Paul Bowack, I'm Marcus Lillington by the way, might say something that makes you laugh or even, dare I say it, impart some wisdom. This month we're going to be talking about really important stuff like getting old, because we're all so old, taking naps. I think there might be a theme starting here. But before we get into that, we trod some pretty serious ground, unusually for us, on the last episode. So when we discussed Basecamp's decision to ban their employees from having any opinions. So I was wondering if anyone had seen any fallout from that or had any further thoughts.
There was no fallout because nobody actually listens to this, does they? Yes. I mean, you make an assumption there's an audience.
It was a good litmus test. Is anyone listening? No.
Yeah. No. I had zero feedback, which means nobody's paying a blind bit of notice to anything to say.
Mind you, I edited most of you out of the last episode, Paul, so, you know, what do you expect?
Oh, did you? Oh, I don't blame you.
No, I didn't.
I would have edited me out, if truth be told.
I don't think any of us, you know, trod on any particularly dodgy ground. I mean, you know, I thought we were overall quite kind of mature and respectful of different opinions. I thought that we were quite... What's the word that I'm trying to think of?
Woke.
Inclusive. That's the word I'm looking for.
I was thinking inhospitable, but no, that's the other thing, isn't it?
Inhospitable. So no, I thought we had a very balanced view, which I don't see anybody could have objected to that. But you just never know.
The difficulty is because it was 2 months ago now. A lot kind of came out just after that podcast.
Yeah.
So there was a big post about, you know, describing the actual culture that was happening at Basecamp and actually going into all the problems, you know, which, you know, which just made you think, bloody hell. And they also offered people money to leave, and loads of people left. So they said, they were offering very good severance packages, which was kind of lauded as this kind of, you know, we're a nice employer, you know, we don't want to hold people back. But I can see it as they're kind of like, you know, wanting to sort out the wheat
get,
from
get
the
rid
trough.
Of the troublemakers, you mean?
Get rid of the chaff, and and it basically seemed they didn't seem in any way remorseful about it, or that they'd made a wrong decision. They'd stuck to their guns, and that was it. But I think fortunately, some people managed to get out. So,
and do you know what? I think that's okay. It's entirely their decision to do that. One thing I don't know whether you saw, but
I know what's coming.
Is it the Apple thing?
Yes.
Right, so, yeah, so Apple obviously, along with everybody else, sent everybody home, and they've been working from home for the last, you know, 18 months, whatever, and they announced a month or so ago that they wanted people to return to the office on a hybrid working model, which was essentially 3 days a week, and some Apple employees took it upon themselves to write this letter to Apple executives. And, you know, the rub of it really, the point of it was, we actually like working from home. You need to change the entire way that that Apple operates, both internally and with hiring and all this kind of stuff. And this letter just reeked of whining and sort of
entitlement,
self kind of, I don't know what it was. It was just like this dreadful stuff, and it contained all of the buzzwords, you know, all of the things beginning with D and I, and you know, all of those things. And I just read this letter again like this morning, and I just thought, do you know what? Businesses are not democracies. If you don't like the way that Apple or any other company decides to run their business, you know, go and get another job. Go work somewhere else. So it just kind of brought it all back. And, you know, You can see I'm trying to be provocative this time, can't you?
Yeah.
You can see I'm trying to get some kind of reaction from our listeners.
To be honest, it does quite amuse me. When I saw that you tweeted this, I thought, okay, so a guy who's worked at home for the vast majority of his career is complaining about people wanting to work from home. I thought that was a little rich.
It's a lot rich. That leads me on to what our first topic, I think, should be this month, which is, and I tell you what, you know, I did work in a company. I do, you know, I work 3 weeks a month for a company now, albeit, you know, from this studio full of apes and gorillas. But I did work for a company for, you know, almost a couple of years down in Australia. And I'll tell you my biggest problem, you know, out of all of the problems that people that work in companies must face, was that I just found it really difficult not being able to take a nap in the afternoon.
Amen. Yeah.
That was my biggest thing. And I'd never kind of experienced that before. You know, the idea of turning up to work at kind of 9 o'clock in the morning and being expected to stay completely focused and stay awake until 5:30 in the afternoon was just completely alien. Yeah. And I find it incredibly tough. So what I used to do, my former colleagues at Ansarada, this is where all the secrets come out, is that opposite the office, we used to rent a terraced house that was above a bar, that was a flat above a barber shop, and it was like the overflow office in case anybody wanted to go and be really quiet. So what I used to do kind of middle of the afternoon was to pop over the road to this office and go and have a little kip.
Yeah.
And nobody really noticed. But it was the only way that I could kind of, you know, keep focused, because I just cannot keep focused for the entire day. I just find it impossible.
No one can. And this is the fundamental problem, and why I've got a little bit of sympathy with all of these people that are now being forced to go back into the workplace after, you know, having a year and a bit of home working, is that, in truth, the whole fundamental basis of the way we organize work is bollocks, right? You know, it's all left over from the Industrial Revolution, where, you know, somebody came up with this formula of 8, 8, and 8, 8 hours sleep, 8 hours work, and 8 hours, you know, for life. And it just doesn't work, because you don't work consistently at a certain level the entire time. And, you know, the idea of working for 8 hours straight makes no sense. And for the kind of work that we do as knowledge workers, whatever the hell that is, in other words, we don't build shit. Yeah, we've got no real value. You know, it makes sense to work around your natural rhythm and your natural
cycles,
way of working,
man.
And you don't need anyone sitting over your shoulder, because I mean the idea of management was that you had, you know, low skilled, low educated, low motivated, low paid individuals that needed a manager to shout at them. We're highly paid, highly skilled, and, you know, hopefully well motivated, so you don't need that kind of oversight. So I think the whole system's broken, and that COVID has just shown that, and that it needs to be seriously, you know, looked at, and companies need to get creative about this stuff. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go into the office. I think the office is great. I think there's a lot going for it, but it's not enough by itself to just carry on like we always have.
Paul Bowegg makes lots of sweeping statements. This is why you're on the show.
Every single one of those statements is 100% accurate.
And none of them are, Paul. Some people don't like to nap. This is true.
Yes.
And I used to, but I don't anymore. But then we'll come on to that one in a minute, I think. I agree that having an 8-hour block where you go to work isn't very productive, because people can't solidly work for 8 hours. Nobody can do that. But it's kind of like, well, how can you organise working 2 hours here, 4 hours there? Or I'm really feeling brilliant today, I'm going to do 10 hours and then do nothing tomorrow. It's really hard to organise that in a big company situation, I think. I just, my brain just goes, and I don't even think about it.
And I think you've got obviously got a point there. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be consistent available hours, but that doesn't need mean that you have to work solidly all of those hours. Do you know that the average company, and you know, this is where I make up a stat that I've read online once, but I was looking at some research because I was beginning to think I'm a lazy bastard. Right. And I was feeling quite guilty that I don't do more than about 4 or 5 hours work a day, if I'm honest. Right. But in truth, the average person does about 3.5 hours worth of actual work in a 8 hour work day.
No.
What do you mean no?
I mean no. All you people talk about, we can only do 3 or 5. I do loads of work in a day. Really?
You just power straight through a whole day, do you?
I don't know, power through is maybe a little bit stronger term to use, but I certainly have, my output is more than 3 or 4 hours. But do carry on.
I need to ask a question here of John. Can you put yourself in the shoes of a job you don't really like? Let's say John Hicks is now a project manager for the rest of his life. Would you be as keen as doing 8 hours solid, or do you think you might find reasons to... well, have a chat with your mate.
It's interesting you say that, because I was just thinking about how, but you know, next year I've been going freelance for 20 years. Oh. So before that, I was in a proper job and I was working in publishing. And what we used to do is, if you just needed a break, it wasn't a nap, but you just gathered loads of files and things together and just walked the corridors really, you know, quite stridently. Because basically, people then wouldn't leave you. They wouldn't sort of like go, oh, can I just... Oh, no, you're obviously on your way to something important. So we're just going to leave you. So that was it. So we just do, like, you know, circuits of the big office, you know, just doing this kind of, you know, strident walk. And then you could, you know, get a few hours off. I mean, it's not like lying down hours off, but it was, you know, time without being bothered.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's saying that everybody should get a nap, and not everybody needs a nap. I think men of a certain privilege and a certain age like to nap, and I include myself in that. But yeah, I mean, do think that, you know, expecting us to work like machines for 8 hours just doesn't happen. I mean, even with you say you work 8 hours. I don't believe you, you know, or you work a full day. I just don't believe you. I expect you wander and look out the window a lot, or you go and make a cup of tea, or, you know, you take the dog for the walk in the middle of the day, or there's always some distraction to free us from the mental burden. Mm. Oh, that sounds so pretentious, doesn't it? the mental exercise that we're having to constantly engage in.
I find myself doing research a lot. Research.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that in your private mode of your browser?
Don't you start. He was making insinuations earlier, Mr. Clark.
Thing is, I would say that my problem is I don't get distracted enough. So, you know, at the end of the day, I would have a lot of headaches because I haven't taken time to stop looking at my screen, look out the window, focus on something far away. I think it maybe it also tends to be the nature of the work I'm doing at the moment, in that it has very sort of busy, frantic periods. And I wouldn't say I work 8 hours a day, but I would definitely say in terms of output, it's more than 3 or 4 hours. Mm. But and just going quickly back to naps, because I've always napped. So when I first had my first job working as a junior designer in Coventry, I would come home and I would have an hour nap, and then I'd have energy for the evening to do whatever crazy things I did when I was in my early 20s. Now, then you then get into a period where we've got kids, so there's no napping, you know, unless they're napping. You might try and grab a little bit of closing eyes or something at that time. But now that my kids are older, getting older now, there's that opportunity a little bit more. And actually, this is what I do. This is our meeting room at the office. We can book it, and we often have, you know, all of us kind of book it for a little nap for an hour. You know, put your headphones on. Yeah. You know, if you've had a really bad night's sleep and you can't concentrate, you're not doing anything, you're not being productive, so you may as well just relax, have the hour power nap, back to life again. It's brilliant. And yeah, no guilt, no problems. It's just, you know, we've even got a sofa bed here.
So do you all cuddle up? Like, you know, like in Gone with the Wind.
Well,
do you all have a dream. a little snuggle?
Pile of dogs.
Yeah. That's the dream, but so far no one's taken me up on the offer. So
what time do you all go to bed?
I take a nap at about 4:30. Ish, 4 to 4:30-ish in the afternoon. And then what I'll do is I'll probably, you know, just check on the things that I've missed, all those people that, you know, shouted at me while I was having the nap. reply to a few things here and there, and then I'll go and have tea, usually have tea about 6 o'clock. And then what quite often, you know, unless there's something really kind of, you know, pressing that I need to do, or on the something on the TV, or, you know, we've got to do the garden or whatever it is, quite often I'll drift back up here, and, you know, sometimes I'll just be fiddling with stuff that I want to fiddle with. Not with my private browsing mode. Or I'll do some actual work. You know, I'll do some work. If I don't feel I've been particularly productive, or actually I've got an idea that I want to get out. And, you know, usually I go to bed at anywhere between 1 and 2 a.m. That tends to be my routine.
Oh, interesting.
That's why you need a nap.
Because didn't you used to be quite an early nighter?
Yeah, I go through phases because Sue goes to bed really early. You know, she famously says that her brain doesn't operate after sort of 7 o'clock, which I think is to do with watching Pointless. But apart from that, so we had sort of, you know, periods where we'd sort of go to bed and watch a TV show and whatever. But I found myself waking up incredibly early. You know, if I went to bed at 10, I'd be awake by 5:30. And some people would say, well, just get up then, you know, be a morning person. But I just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. What time do you get up now then?
I'll usually roll into the office between 9 and 9:30, unless I've got a call with somebody. But, you know, I know that we joke about not doing that many hours of actual work during the day, but I know the times of day when I'm productive, and I know the times of day when I'm not. And, you know, first thing in the morning is not a time to be solving any, you know, UX or creative problems. So my mornings tend to be very much, okay, what am I going to do? And, you know, fiddling with email. And then I don't really get into kind of productive design work until, you know, until after lunch. But I've just sort of shifted my productive stuff to later on in the, you know, the afternoon or evening, because, you know, it's quiet and it just seems to be where my, you know, where my brain works best.
And you see, that brings me back to the, because I'm not dissimilar to what you've just described, a little bit different, but it brings me back to why don't companies accommodate that more? I understand what Marcus is saying, and he is right, but, you know, as long as you were actually available for email, you know, and you know, if somebody had something urgent that they could reach you, then yeah, why not work in the evenings as well, you know, or whatever. You know, I think we're all different, and we should be able to accommodate that better.
Well, of course, the problem is if you work for a client in another time zone, then often you do end up working.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, trying to accommodate, like, for example, West Coast of America, or a recent client was Australia. You know, you've got quite a sort of a small window in which you can sort of be around together. So it's, you know, it's that flexibility, I think.
I'm trying a new thing related to working hours and stuff. It's only an experiment at the moment. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm having weekend Wednesdays. So what I'm doing is I take Wednesdays off, but I work Sundays, at least in theory. You know,
I was going to say, actually, this is just a 4-day week, isn't it, Paul?
No. Because right, there's a couple of reasons for it. Number one is that
you hate working.
It's nice to be able to have breaks more regularly, if you're honest. You know, going on a Monday through to a Friday without having a break, you know, it's doable. We all managed to do it perfectly well. But it would be nice if you only had to work 2 or 3 days in a row before you got a break. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is, to be honest, you take a Wednesday off, there's nobody anywhere. It's great. You can go out and enjoy the world without crowds of people, which is great. Mm. And on top of which, having that Sunday when no one emails you and no one hassles you for a whole day, you get an amazing amount done on the Sunday. And actually, although I say, you know, I only work probably half the Sunday, but I achieve more in that half a day than I do in a day and a half in the week, you know?
I try to avoid working on the weekend, but sometimes you have to, trying to catch up. Yeah. And it's absolutely true. Also, because I kind of tend to... It's not a great habit, but I tend to continually check email, continually check this, continually check that. It's really just, it's an avoidance thing. It's like, you know, I don't want to write this boring document. Has anyone emailed me? But obviously on the weekend, there's none of that. And it does mean that you get an awful lot more done.
I do like that idea, though. I've tried several things in the past along those lines, like, you know, taking half of Friday off and then working, you know, Sunday afternoon or something like that. But I do think it's a good thing to do, especially, you know, when you want to go out somewhere now, you know, you go out on a Wednesday, there's not, you know, crowds of people in a Carnarvon garden center, on a wet Wednesday afternoon. So, you know, come there Saturday, you're fighting all kinds of biddies, but you know, now
I would like to
Them out of the way. I just knock them out of the way. I'm quite aggressive with my trolley in a garden centre. I don't care.
Biddies can be quite aggressive too.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing what you can buy in a garden centre now. I mean, you know, I know that you'd expect to buy plants and compost, but, you know, some of the fragrance of candles that you can buy in a garden centre, I didn't even know.
You can buy plastic tat, fiberglass tat, resin tat, raffia or basket woven.
Oh, yes, I've seen that. Yes.
Stone tat.
Stone tat. Oh, you're like concrete pretending to be stone tat.
Oh, even better. Yeah.
Now, I've got an interesting thing that Alex told me the other day, which is completely off topic. So I apologize now for stepping outside of our diligently compiled notes. Because obviously I live in Wales, and a lot of North Wales is the hillsides are covered in slag. They're covered in slate slag. So if you go to somewhere like, you know, Blaenau Ffestiniog, it's like stepping back in time to the 1870s, right? You imagine people coming out of their houses all, you know, in monochrome. You know, it's a crazy thing. Anyway, I didn't realize this. Alex told me this, that 90% of the slate that they dug out of the ground from the mines was wastage, which is why it's piled up on all the hillsides. They only use 10%. Now what they're doing is they're clearing all the slate, or they're clearing, starting to clear slate from the hillsides, all those little bits and pieces that are all kind of, you know, all over Blaenau Ffestiniog, shipping it off to China, because that's where, you know, everything goes these days. And then what they do is they grind it up and they make reconstituted slate things that you can then buy in garden centres. Mm. So if you want a planter, you know, a slate planter in a garden centre, it's likely to be made of reconstituted slate.
As I said at the start of this show, you're going to learn something here.
Exactly. So now there's zero wastage, which means, if you're doing your calculations correct, that 100% of the slate is now going into the product, which I find quite interesting. But
very environmentally friendly.
But what they're trying to figure out is it right to strip the hillsides back to being, you know, natural and covered in plants, whereas at the moment they're covered in slag? Because the slag is part of our history and industrial heritage and whatever. So, you know, should we leave the slag or should we use the slag? It's an interesting question.
But this preserving things for the sake of it. I mean, I walk down South Bank whenever I'm in London and look at those concrete monstrosities and think, should we really be preserving these? Is this what we do now? We preserve concrete blocks. Surely we should preserve stuff that's nice.
Well, concrete blocks can be nice.
Oh, I'm not even going to respond to that because you're just trying to trigger me.
Absolutely, John. That's exactly
I'm
what I'm
Paul,
doing.
I'm just going to sit here and trigger people and then sit back and enjoy myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up, John.
Signs of aging, what have you noticed? And what's the worst thing?
And please don't get too, you know, not too medical.
Oh, why I not? I could go so TMI right now. I really could. TMI on your ass. No, it was just little simple things that I kept coming across. So, for example, my barber one day trimmed my nose hair. So he didn't ask, didn't say, you know, would you like me to trim you? Yeah, and all of a sudden he was up there going, and the next visit I thought, right, I've got your number, and I did it all myself. It's really, really short, and you know what they did? They trimmed my eyebrows. So I don't know if you see, my eyebrows are kind of almost non-existent. They're just little bits of nothing. You know, but he still found something to trim, and I thought, you bastard. It's going to be ear hair next.
I reckon mine would join my hair if they weren't cut every time I have my hair cut.
Really?
Yeah.
That could be a protective barrier.
Yeah, yeah.
That could be quite useful.
That's what it's for, isn't it? That's why old men get long eyebrows and ear hair, isn't it? It's to keep the diseases away.
It's true.
The fact we're all sat here with glasses on. That's the worst thing.
Yeah.
Varifocals. But yes, absolutely. Yes, I've got varifocals on.
Yeah.
I want to ask about varifocals because I've avoided them. And so I'm short-sighted normally. But now every time I look at my phone, I have to take these off. Yeah. They go up on the top of my head to look at my phone. And I'm wondering whether I get varifocals. But
should.
I should. Should I? They're good, are they?
Yes.
Well, okay. I'm the other way around. So all of you guys have worn glasses all your life kind of thing? You didn't have the 45 and fall off the cliff and suddenly I'm blind?
No, pretty much.
My eyes were perfect. Absolutely nothing wrong with them. And then, yes, just blindness instantly. Almost. I'm exaggerating to make the point, but it was like, oh, I can't read this anymore, this thing. And then...
Sorry, Marcus, we don't exaggerate on this show. Please be as accurate as possible.
Good point, well made. But anyway, I now need the bottoms of these glasses are for up close, right? Foot away. The top part is for the screen, which they didn't get right. They didn't believe me that I sit more than a meter away from my screen. Oh no, everyone sits about 80 centimeters, sir. So anyway, I'm like this most of the time, trying to see it. And I now also need it for about sort of the telly distance. So I need three different levels of glasses. So I'm thinking about getting contact lenses for the furthest away one. Mm. But then all my glasses would be wrong. Anyway, this is... I hate it.
Yeah.
Anyone it's else wear contacts? Isn't it?
I've worn contacts.
Used to. But they're such a faff.
Yeah.
Has anybody thought about having their eyes lasered?
No. Well, yes, I have, but no, it just never happens.
I've heard
someone describe the process of what they actually do to the eye, and I do not want that. I'm more than happy just to take these things on and off, done, sight sorted. The whole laser treatment, although I have thought about it in terms of, because they can correct colour blindness as well.
Ooh.
So I thought, well, maybe get the double package. So that's the one thing that makes me think, maybe I should. But then I wonder if I suddenly have proper, you know, colour vision, you know, at, what am I now, 48, whether I'm just going to be freaked out by the actual colour that things are. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It'll be like some sort of trip for the rest of my life. I don't know.
Sticking with having things fixed or altered or whatever, has anybody considered having any form of cosmetic surgery or Botox
or
anything like that?
I have, then, I guess you could argue, because I have my teeth fixed. I used to have a big gap, didn't I, in the middle of
my teeth.
Oh, yes, you did. Yes, we don't look at you that often, Paul.
It's... Well, no, you wouldn't want to. But yeah, but vanity got the best of me over that. And we did it. Yeah.
Was that painful?
I don't regret
it.
No, it was irritating and inconvenient because, you know, you had to wear a brace for a year or a year and a bit. But I'm glad I did it because I was very self-conscious about my mouth. I was, you know, when I wouldn't smile very freely and I would often cover my mouth. And so it was,
you're so coy and embarrassed.
Oh,
my name's Paul.
Oh, Mr. Darcy. Yeah.
Would you do Botox?
Of what?
Well, to eliminate fine lines and wrinkles, I think, is the reason why that people have it done.
I don't, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't do anything else.
Do you know what? We're getting into that area again where we're kind of old white men discussing, would we get cosmetic surgery? No, I don't think we need cosmetic surgery. And, you know, it's like we have none of the pressures on us to... Which is
especially someone as gorgeous as you, John.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. But I do think some men actually get better as they go older. Like, I don't know, George Clooney. Yeah, exactly. You're far more polished than you used to be.
Yeah.
But I think people like George Clooney, they just look, they sort of grow into themselves a little bit. It's kind of weird. But then
Vin
obviously
Diesel
we don't.
Is another one.
Oh yeah.
What's
a,
you, what did
got
you say?
A thing for Vin Diesel.
Right.
However, no. Paul has a thing for Vin Diesel.
He's my inspiration.
But no, rewind. Andy, you asked the question. Is it something that you are considering?
No. Clearly. I mean, I have thought about it at various points. Obviously, to pick up on John's point, I would be in a very fortunate position if I was to spend my disposable income on improving, or you know. Improving my appearance or freezing my face or something. I used to dye my hair when I started to go grey. I used to dye my hair, but you know, not for a long, long time. In fact, if you know, now you can see this luxuriant white beard, which is a little bit salt and pepper. So one thing that I did do a couple of years ago was I actually tried to bleach my white beard to go whiter because I wanted it to be white and not salt and pepper. And it was a total disaster.
Did it go yellow?
I think I put some pictures up in the chat. It did go yellow, and no amount of the other stuff that you put on it changed it. So I ended up shaving off my beard.
Well, the one that obviously... he says, this is going to be shocking to you all, but if there was anything I was going to get done, it would be probably hair plugs or whatever.
I can't believe it, Paul. Why would you say that?
I know, it's shocking. But, you know, I am, if I let my hair grow, it's a train wreck. It's awful because I've got a big bald patch at the back and I've receded all the way, you know, right up now. So yeah, I do miss my hair.
there are some very convincing syrups that you can buy.
Yeah, but can you imagine the level of abuse that I would get if I suddenly started wearing, you know, something like that? That would just be hilariously funny. I'm tempted to do it now just because of the comedy value.
It would be like, it would be a bit like Andy dyeing his hair black and his beard and his eyebrows. It would be even funnier than that. But yes,
would be good to see.
And then the only other thing that I've found, I think, that is kind of, you know, going back to the topic, signs of aging, is I do think that I'm starting to get, arthritic ankles, which I'm a little bit worried about. So I do find walking around to be quite painful, which is, you know, not a good thing. But apart from that, I'm fit as a fiddle.
I'm just going to move on to another sign of aging, which to see what your reaction is. So bladder.
Oh,
now it's. When I went to see Avengers Endgame at the cinema, it took a lot of planning. So it's just over 3 hours, So let's say, for example, going to a showing at about 7:30. That means I need to stop drinking anything after about 3:30.
Right.
Yeah. And then by doing that, I can then get to the end of Endgame without needing to go for a wee in the middle. Mm. Now, is this something that you've experienced, or is, you know, am I alone in my bladder problems?
Oh, we should so just claim. Oh, no, I've never had a problem.
No, I'm fine. Just, yeah, I don't have any problems.
The way you laughed, it was obvious.
I'm not that bad.
No, I'm not that bad.
Well, you could get through a 3-hour movie without having needing your wee.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You could have a drink in the foyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See a 3-hour movie.
Ah, but now. Really? No. It depends. A drink. See, if I had. Let's say we're going to go to the pub beforehand. I could have one pint of beer and I'd be all right.
Mm-hmm.
If I had two, not a chance, and I'd go once and then I'd have to go every 15 minutes.
Once you start, you can't stop. It's like Pringles, but with bladder.
Yeah.
So let's talk about hemorrhoids. How are we doing on that?
Oh, that was a subject I was...
No problems at all.
No, don't have any problems.
No problem. I can sit on a cold step for a weekend and not have to worry.
That's impressive. Well done, gentlemen. I'm very pleased for you both. Thanks.
Shall we move on to something else?
Yes, please.
We're probably at the point when we might want to start wrapping up.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, we can't wrap up on hemorrhoids. Can we really? Is that what we're going to wrap up on?
Well, do you know what? An interesting fact that came up on QI about hemorrhoids of the week. Did you know that everyone has hemorrhoids?
Yes, no. I did know that.
It's not a thing that you get hemorrhoids and it's a problem. Everyone has hemorrhoids, which apparently that's how it stops things coming out.
Falling out, shall we say. Yeah. Gravity.
Which, my terrible first day at opera, they weren't working very well that day. But that's on another podcast. That's another story.
Oh, you can't leave that there.
It's disgusting. I can't go. No, it really is disgusting.
I'm pretty sure I could up you on that story.
Yeah, no, I probably could too.
Yeah.
I've had two instances. One where I was speaking in Egypt and the food didn't agree with me on the day I was speaking, and that all became a little panicky. But my all-time favorite was I will be upfront and say, yes, I do indeed suffer occasionally from hemorrhoids. And so I own hemorrhoid cream, right? And there was one particular time when I was in a hotel and I'd had quite a rough night the night before, you know, in terms of drinking and enjoying myself. And I was a little hungover and I got up in the morning and I brushed my teeth and suddenly the whole of my mouth contracted. Like this, as I'd use the hemorrhoid cream as toothpaste.
So before we wrap up, I am very interested to find out how, because we've had 2 months now since the last podcast, I'm very interested to find out how you three chaps got on with Andy's challenge from last episode. Mm-hmm. So if you remember, and this is for the listeners, I challenged the chaps to apply to be on a daytime TV show. So
that's what it was.
Marcus, your challenge was to apply to be on Bargain Hunt. Did you do it?
Yeah, I did. And they said, no, we don't want you. So that was that, really. I've just remembered.
Did they give a reason?
I've just remembered what the challenge was when you said it, Andy. or that there even was a challenge. I've been very, very busy. Yes, busy. That's always my excuse.
You're not taking these challenges seriously, Marcus.
Well, I will when we'll I find. To, I will when you give me one that I want to do. There you go.
I have one for you, so don't go away. Paul, right. Your challenge was to be either on Naked Attraction or, I think it was Escape to the Country. Did you do it?
I did Naked Attraction, and I really did do it. And I filled in all the forms and sent it off, and I got zero response. They did not in any way acknowledge the fact that I had applied, there was nothing back. Terrible user experience, and I'm disgusted at them, but I did do it.
Okay. John, your challenge was to apply to be on Changing Rooms. Did you do it?
Mm-hmm. Not Changing Rooms, because as we said at the time, Changing Rooms requires not only me, but someone else to be involved, and also
yes.
a neighbour's. So I chose my own daytime show, and ooh. I chose Homes Under the Hammer.
Oh, good choice.
So would you? I haven't heard back from them, but can I read you the letter I sent them?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, okay. So to bear with me, okay, some of it might not make sense till halfway through. So, John Hicks, 6th of May 2021 per calendar month. Homes Under the Hammer Department, Line TV, Coach House, Alfred Muse, Fitzrovia. Bye-bye. Dear Sir Madam, I hope this letter finds you well. I would very much like to apply to be on Homes Under the Hammer as one of your estate agent characters, as I believe I would be perfect for this, and my qualifications are as follows. I have my own suit, dark blue, but I can buy an M&S bright blue one with brown shoes, if that is more suitable. I have a rare condition where I can't say numbers without adding per calendar month at the end. Normally, this presents a problem in everyday life, but on your show, it's a positive boon. And most importantly, I have been practicing walking into a room, looking around, always starting with the ceiling, and I think I've nailed it. I've got it down to a perfect in and out in 6 per calendar month seconds. I do hope you will consider my application and that I'll get a fair price. Yours, John Hicks.
Oh, John!
And wonderful.
And nothing.
And they haven't come back to you?
No, surprisingly. really, sarky twat. But that's a shame, because I love Homes Under the Hammer. And we can put a link in the show notes about this. But there's this YouTube video that someone did of, they took all the footage of estate agents where they do that bit where they go into a room and they look around and then yeah. they go out again. But they put eerie music on it instead.
And
it's only been about 40 seconds, this YouTube video. Everyone can fit it into their lives. But it's brilliant. It just, it puts another spin on these little sections with the estate agent. So yeah, there we go.
That's brilliant.
Love it. Love it. Well, I think that is a superb result. And yeah, I think that qualifies you to be exempt from this month's challenge. Only Marcus and Paul have to do this month's
challenge.
What about
challenge? You? And you? You haven't even
hang
said
on a
about,
minute.
Yeah, hang
you
on.
You were going to go on to Love Island.
What did you apply for?
Love Island it was.
Yeah.
Yes, I did apply to Love Island. Uh-huh. I filled out all of my my questionnaires. Mm-hmm. And actually, what I did realize was that I should have sent off a video of me doing my, in 1 minute, why I think I need to be on Love Island. And I need to get Alex to help me film that. So they reminded me with the thing, please send a video, et cetera, et cetera, which I will do. So I will report back next month.
He's about as believable as my lie. I mean, my...
Well, this is going to be an easier one for you this month, right? I would like you, and John can do this if he likes, although he is exempt, I would like you to get an autographed photograph of a celebrity. You have to write a fan letter to a celebrity and ask them for an autographed photograph.
Now, how are we defining celebrity?
Well, I don't know. Somebody that we might have heard of, you know, somebody on the telly.
It's got to be somebody you've heard of. All right, then.
Paul, write to me. I'll send you one.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Well, years ago, many, 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 many years ago, I'm thinking like 1985 or 6 or something like that, when I was a bored and penniless student in Nottingham, Me and the girl that I shared a flat with at the time, we actually did this. We wrote off to lots of, you know, soap stars and actors and other people to get signed photographs. And the letters were always like, you know, oh man, I'm such a fan of your work. And, you know, I just love everything. I really enjoyed you in so and so. And I did get a bunch back, surprisingly. I got Bob Hoskins. I got Timothy Dalton. I got Kenneth Williams, who, of course, is my all-time favorite comic. Yeah, so I got a bunch of these things. In fact, Kenneth Williams actually sent me a little paperback book as well with me. And I've still got these things knocking about somewhere. So, you know, it is doable. But maybe we could report back and let people know our fawning fan letters and whether or not we got a response.
Okay. Yes.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I think I'm sure I can do this one. I like the idea. I don't know who to send it to yet. Perhaps Tristan just said the four of us should be on Jeremy Clarkson's new farming show. So perhaps I should do Jeremy Clarkson. Right? Mm. See, he might be he feels appropriate for our show, you know, overly opinionated, of a certain age and, you know, politically incorrect. So yeah.
Blustering on even though he does nothing, doesn't know how to do anything. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Has no real value in life whatsoever.
Perhaps John can do Bob Mortimer.
I love Bob.
He might send me a cat name for free. You never know. He usually charges £8 for his cat names, but that's a good shout. I might give that a go.
Yeah, I like that.
I think we should
wrap
it up, chaps.
Yes, yeah. I think we should.
No, I like your challenge. This is good. I might try and do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well done.
All right, well, we will be back in roughly a month's time when we'll think of something else to talk about. God knows what that'll be by the time we get there. We might have a slightly sensible show next time where we'll talk about running businesses. Maybe, I don't know. Could do that. Anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure, chaps, as always.
And we'll see you next month.
God willing.